Hello and welcome to Bengler Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week here on KWBU-FM, we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, administrators, and more, discussing higher education, research, student life, and other important topics. I'm Derek Smith. Thanks for joining us today on the program. We are joined by Dr. Jim Eller. Dr. Eller is a professor and PhD program co-director in the Diana R. Garland School of Social Work, an expert on aging, mental health, the spiritual aspects of aging, dementia, trauma, and more. Dr. Eller's expertise and call to serve is lived out not only in the classroom, but through direct work with older adults, partnerships with local and state agencies, and his role as a bivocational minister at Waco's First Presbyterian Church. He joined the Baylor faculty in 2004, but has worked as a medical social worker and gerontologist for more than 40 years. Dr. Eller, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You know, you do a lot of work with older adults, and there's a real focus on gerontology and the School of Social Work. A number of professors that you work with who work with older adults, and we're going to talk about that as the show goes on. But I want to ask you first about what drew you to that field of topic. You know, when you think about aging, mental health, PTSD, These are a lot of subjects that people find difficult to talk about or think about, but you've made that your life's work. What was it that led you to that?
In my undergraduate degree, I happened into a gerontology course. I needed an elective, and I was a sociology major kind of a thing. And my girlfriend wanted to go to that class, and so I decided that was a pretty good place to go. And so it was sort of by happenstance a little bit. But I've always said that gerontologists are closet historians. Essentially, we don't want to do the work of a historian in the sense of keeping track of it all, but we really like old things and old people and interactions with folks that are that have a lot of history to them. It was once said that youth is wasted on the young. Mm-hmm. And, when you talk to older adults, if they had the energy they had had when they were young, now that they're old, they would be different people and do things differently. So it's an interesting kind of a combination, and you meet a lot of history. Mm-hmm. We have in McGregor a woman who was one of the first women on Omaha Beach in World War II.
Wow.
I have met Muhammad Ali. I have met probably don't remember, but under President Nixon, Julian Levy was the attorney general, and his mother walked into the daycare center I was at one day right after that happened, and everyone was congratulating her and said, and she said, looked at us all and she said, well, she says, the attorney general is nice, but what he really wants is the Supreme Court. If only I had recorded that moment, you know. Mm-hmm. So you meet some amazing people in all of this, and it's that really kind of drives us forward, particularly in the church. The saints that go before us are all kind of there in their own humble and small ways, and it's interesting to kind of interact and talk with folks.
Do you find that older adults and the needs and challenges they face are sort of underserved, and maybe the world on the whole maybe doesn't think about what they bring and what they need enough?
Yeah, pretty much. The current Social Security Act and Medicare and Medicaid all came out of the Great Depression. Social Security in 1935 and Medicare and Medicaid, of course, not till 65. But the whole impetus to Social Security were all of the older adults who had nothing and couldn't work on the farm. And you may recall in this area in Upcoming Oklahoma particularly, it was a dust bowl. Mm-hmm. During that same time. And so the bottom line was that the older adults, because they couldn't work, had no way of having anything. Today in this area, the biggest problem that's sort of akin to that are older adults who owned small farms and worked them all of their lives. Now they can no longer work the farm, and they can't even sell it. And so they're now property rich and cash poor. Mm-hmm. And at that point, far from town, far from support. If one or the other is disabled, then they probably can't get around all that well. It's problematic. the current war against retirement benefits is going to cripple the future generations, particularly those who, particularly women who are widows and the like. So we need to continue to work and advocate, as folks have in the past, to try to make sure that grandma and grandpa can still be supported.
You know, as a social worker, you're not only studying their needs, but actively working to fill that gap to meet those needs. And I'm going to ask you more specifically in a moment the work you do with older adults through the Baylor Dinah Garland School of Social Work. But on the broader level, I know you and several colleagues focus a lot of your research and study efforts on gerontology. Could you give us sort of a brief overview of some of the outreaches and efforts that are taking place in the School of Social Work?
You bet. Originally, before I came here, there was an institute for gerontology, which was a part of the sociology social work department. Dennis Myers is still there from that group and has long been a leader in all of this area. And we have some new colleagues that are interested in the area. And so the reason in many ways why social work has been so strong in gerontology was because it absorbed the Gerontology Institute. Mm-hmm. But it's always been interdisciplinary. Gerontology, for better or worse, has always been interdisciplinary. And so while it generally lands in a department somewhere and when it's in higher ed, it's important that we recognize that because we're dealing with whole people, we have to deal with all of their various aspects and needs. And there is at this point through Dr. Myers and others support, particularly in the School of Ed and like that, an effort to try to bring together across campus a coalition and even the potential of at least a certificate, if not a master's degree in gerontology. The challenge for us is to attract young people to gerontology. So most young people want to work with kids. You know, that's what they're accustomed to. That's what they're comfortable with. That's what they know. I was one of those unique kids who wanted to work with old people. But then there are some out there. But it's always sort of a challenge to kind of keep a momentum within the student population going.
We are talking to Professor of Social Work, Dr. Jim Eller. And Dr. Eller, you know, talking about you more specifically, the work you're doing here at Baylor with older adults in terms of research projects, initiatives, just areas of focus. If a student came up to you and said, I think I'm interested in going into gerontology and I'd like you to mentor me or to be a grad assistant, what sort of projects would I be involved in? What sort of projects might they work on with you?
Right at the moment, my major focus is around spirituality in older adults. Being both a pastor and a social worker, that's always been the nexus of those two fields, has been this kind of spiritual approach to things. Historically, I have worked in dementia and dementia care, and historically, I've worked in long-term care issues. And historically, actually, I continue to be on the Council of Governments Human Services Committee, which is actually a gerontology committee for the Area Agency on Aging. And so I continue to do lots of stuff across that and have aspirations to move back into more topics around families and like that. But right at the moment, having come off a major actually military project, I'm working more towards solving some spiritual puzzles.
When you look at spirituality and aging, where do you begin with that? What does that look like?
The field of gerontology back in the 70s concluded from a longitudinal study at Duke University that you don't really become more religious as you age. It's actually a result of how religious you were as a child. That's referred to as a cohort effect. Cohort is different from generation in that generation is age graded, where cohort is experience graded. So everybody who experienced World War II is a cohort, or everyone who experienced 9/11 is a cohort kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And at any age, you're now a cohort that experienced that. And it was understood that religion was a cohort effect. We now have data from our research that suggests that actually the transition hasn't, the expectation back in the 70s was that there were old people would stop going to church by about this time. And that, that because it was a cohort effect, and the people who were young back before World War II are dying or have died off, that's the greatest generation that's dying, and I forget the pace, but it's several thousands a day at this point. Because they're in their 80s and 90s, but the expectation was that by now there'd be very little church going. Church going has actually remained fairly flat. When you the Four Gods study that was initiated out of the Baylor Longitudinal Study on Religion basically determined that about depends on which study you read, but about 90% of people in this country believe in God, which is higher than in Europe. I make some note on that. I ran into a Baptist missionary to Wales about 8 years ago, and I remember being kind of surprised. Why are we sending missionaries to Europe? Because they've been sending them everywhere else for so long, and yet he pointed out the patterns. And that was kind of the first time I'd rocked on that set of statistics. But the challenge for us is that while lots of people believe in God, we're still dealing with, I'm going to say 30%, but again, it depends on the study and what you're focusing on, people who go to church, synagogue, temple, or mosque. And so the question between those two is what's the difference and how does that impact? And since that's remained flat all of these years, the question is, where is spirituality? Where does that come from? And spirituality is a term that's nearly impossible to define in a satisfactory way for everybody. But the one thing that is fairly clear is that how we view God, because 90% of people believe in God, is more of a universal. Mm-hmm. And as such, then it turns out from that Frost and Bader study, which was a subset of the Longitudinal Study on Religion, that the images of God between a God who is just and vengeful versus a God who is benevolent connects with depression. It connects with anxiety and depression, anxiety, depression, and stress. That the folks who believe in the justice God are far more likely to be depressed and have challenges. And the people who believe in the beneficent God, they simply cope differently with life and therefore have fewer of those kinds of issues. And that turns out then to be a more useful measure than this, whether than fighting to figure out what spirituality actually is, and in terms of trying to look at religion, which has remained flat. And so I'm arguing there's actually a new paradigm instead of this movement that's been expected since the 70s of simply turning away from all things faith. What's happened is it's sort of taken a right turn, and it's moved more into the whole sense of, well, spirituality is the mantra. That's what everybody talks about, although they don't all mean the same thing. But it's best measured, particularly in times of trauma, by taking a look at what your view of God is, because God is more supportive and therefore more helpful at times of stress when one believes in the benevolent God as opposed to the just God. The critical question at the root of that is the spiritual different from the cognitive? You know, if you lose memory, have you lost your spirituality? And if you believe that God is active in this world, you believe in an active God, then the spirit is more than an idea. The spirit is something that acts within us. And Presbyterians are probably more fond of talking about the Holy Spirit rather than spirituality. There are lots of folks from more mystical traditions who talk about it as the spirit. However one frames that, this active God image, if you believe in that, it does make a difference. And as we sort it out, when you don't believe in an active God, for example, there are actually four gods within the original concept. One of those is God really isn't active in the world, created it and quit. But God is a God of justice. Therefore, when I die, I'm going to have to face the judgment seat. There's an old preacher's joke that goes something like, little boy talks to his mother and says, why is grandpa always reading the Bible? And the mother says calmly, he's studying for final exams.
Yeah.
And so hospice workers and folks need to understand that person because they haven't paid a lot of attention to God. They'll acknowledge God existed, but it's probably a creator God that they're most understanding of at that point. But at the point to which they start getting closer to God, Kubler-Ross and others have said two kinds of people die with great internal or emotional comfort, the very religious and the very atheistic or non-religious. It's the people who aren't sure, mm-hmm. who have the greatest turmoil in death. And so, you know, that's one impact area. Within the just God area, you're dealing with people who are struggling to try to understand how God is just within a certain situation, but they do believe that God sends bad things to punish and bring people back to God. All of pastoral care as a field is written to the folks who believe in the benevolent God, because the right answer, if someone says, why is this happening to me, is, I don't know, but I know God is walking with you. That's the pastoral care right answer, and we're all taught it. The problem is that it doesn't work well for this Justice God group of folks. Mm-hmm.
We are talking to social work professor and gerontologist Dr. Jim Eller here on Baylor Connections. I want to, as we talk about this, maybe bring it home to people who are living with or serving in some way an aging loved one or an aging friend. In this community, certainly there are a lot of people, certainly people listening, who are facing that as their parents aged or a loved one ages. What advice would you give to them from the research you've done, the role that they can play or resources out there that you can point them to, ways that they can serve the needs of the older adults in their life as best they can? Because I think for most people, it's a little scary, you know? Life doesn't give us a lot of preparation for dealing with that.
No, that's exactly right. And you know, if we start from the premise from a couple of minutes ago, I think we have to kind of, at least I believe, that the spirit and the cognitive are separate functions, that that God can be with us no matter what. And if we start from that premise, then dementia is a little less scary because what you've lost is memory. What you haven't lost is spirituality. And I can give you lots of stories about that. And so from an anecdotal kind of a perspective and from a worship kind of a perspective, older adults are very much into that. And as I'm 66 now myself, and so I've spent a lifetime studying older adults, and now I'm studying myself, I suppose. Freud did it, so I figured it's got a good pattern.
Sure.
But the challenge for us is to kind of listen to what does our aging mean to us and where do we go. Back in the 70s, I worked a lot in hospital settings with people who were dying. And back in the 70s, more people would die without all the buzzers and bangs and modern medicine things around them. And so there were times when you could actually talk to people who were clearly at that last moment in their life. Recently had that same opportunity with my best friend from seminary who was dying, and we just did the funeral last weekend. And people who are dying, they don't talk about all of the things killing the middle-aged. It's not, I should have gotten a bigger car, why didn't I get that better job, why didn't I build a bigger house? You know, those are totally irrelevant when we're dying. What's relevant to people is actually the need to understand relationships with people. And so if you start with that as your vision going into aging, then the question is, how do you build relationships that are meaningful? And then how do you support those relationships? And that reframes it away from the financial, which can be very scary. It reframes it away from, will I have a walker or will I need room in my house for a wheelchair kinds of things. It reframes it down to, at the end of the day, as a person of faith, I would suggest is the more meaningful, which is my faith and my relationships with people.
Gerontology, we're talking about older adults, but in a lot of ways, you know, you think of younger people interacting with them. If a child of a parent who's dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's, do you ever, when you talk to them or their insights, you glean from the way the aging process or disease impacts the younger people around them?
Hopefully, younger people see in the older adults patterns and ways to live. I'm a student of Viktor Frankl's, and he always used to say that effectively there should be you should be no such thing as survivor guilt, only survivor responsibility. The responsibility to tell the story and to understand what's going on with the person. Mm-hmm. And the challenge for younger people today is to understand the meaning of people's lives and then to sort out of those meanings, how can I move forward in a way that's meaningful to me, that puts mm-hmm. who I am within that.
We are talking to Dr. Jim Eller and Dr. Eller as we wind down on the program. I think it's see a lot of ways that the work you do fits into the broader Baylor mission. But as you do that, is that something you think about? And how do you see that fitting into the broader Baylor and School of Social Work mission as well?
I'm very aware that I represent Baylor in anything I do, even if I'm wearing a Presbyterian shirt or some other identity.
I should mention again, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you're a pastor, a bivocational pastor at First Presbyterian Church here in Waco.
Right. And a member of the Presbyterian Disaster Assistance, and so when you even if you're wearing some other color, you introduce yourself and what's your day job? Well, Baylor is my day job, and so even though when you're trying to help someone with their problems and therefore focusing on them, it comes up as a part of identity, and that broader identity then sort of I'll call it wears a flag. We fling our green and gold afar, mm-hmm. and that's the piece of it that how we do that and how we model that for others makes a very large difference.
Well, Dr. Jim Eller, I appreciate you coming on the show today. I wish we had more time because you've done a lot of other great work in other areas, but that might be for another program. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Jim Eller, our guest today here on Baylor Connections. A reminder, you can hear this and other Baylor Connections programs online at baylor.edu/connections. And, of course, every week here Friday mornings at 11 on KWBU-FM. I'm Derek Smith. This has been Baylor Connections. I want to thank KWBU-FM station manager Brody Bashaw and Cassie Bowers and Lori Fogelman from Baylor Marketing and Communications. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.